All right. Well, we're not doing a live show this evening because it's just with the Game 5 World Series going on, and just trying to do a little bit of different format as we're in the off-season mode. Welcome to another episode of the Tigers Minor League Report podcast. As we're doing a mailbag edition, we had a lot of great questions. We'll get to those shortly. So thank you for everybody who has been tuning in to the content, checking out all our AFL content on Twitter, and also just reading our articles or award winners that have been coming out too. But the last few days here, just trying to get everything set up. I'm telling you, I had the worst food poisoning ever.
That's brutal.
It was like top three of all time kind of moment where I'm still sore right here from like my chest to my stomach down. It's
Were you ever able to trace it back to what you ate or what you
thought? I think it was the eggs. I realized, like, because both my wife and my son had ribs that I made. Mm-hmm. They didn't get sick. And I come to think it was the eggs, because I had a hot and ready slice at a Lions game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. But my brother-in-law didn't get sick. And so the only thing I could think of was the eggs. So
it's a real airplane moment where... You had everybody who had the fish.
Everybody had the fish, yeah.
And the one woman started, you know, popping eggs out of her mouth. Well, that's a bummer. Yeah, man, I've been fortunate to avoid that for most of my life. I do remember the one time I had, like, really severe food poisoning. It's super memorable for me because my son had to get surgery at the time, and so I was in the hospital, and I assume I caught it there somehow. But yeah, I was supposed to like take care of him the next day because it was like his tonsils out or whatever. And it was like a hangover times 10. Like I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything. It was brutal. Oof. And it lasted for like a week and a half.
Yeah. So,
but yeah. Anyway, that's how we like to start our podcast, with a little gastrointestinal talk. G-I-T.
G-I. Yeah. It's getting older like that. So
AFL.
Yeah, AFL. Yeah, and there's a lot of that going on with it has been a memorable AFL. Also, there's these new they got new things here on StreamYard. I have a short attention span. No, but it's been a memorable AFL for one Jose Briseño, and is one of those things where we look at the stats and everybody. I think he tweeted this out where we had talked about others who've done well in the AFL for the Tigers, but the significant difference was they were all older prospects in their third or fourth time around in the AFL, correct?
Well, not necessarily like the second or third, you know, multiple times there in the AFL, but yes, they were all, in every instance except maybe Stephen Moya, I think everybody else was a older, you know, college American guy. And the Tigers just don't have a long history of guys going to the AFL and doing well. It's
right
at and sometimes you can't tell, like every now and then there's a year out there where everybody hits a ton. I think 2008 was like that. And that was, I think, one of the years where Casper Ells, I think, hit 8 home runs or whatever. But yeah, what Briseño is doing, it's tough to put it into perspective, into the proper perspective, because it's such a hitter friendly league, but there are different challenges there. You're facing tons of different arms. I don't know. You don't want to say like, hey, look what he did here. He's going to be a monster prospect. Because you can go back and look at other players who've done good numbers in the AFL, and some of them are really good, and some of them you've never heard of. But it's hard not to get excited about a guy who's barely 20 years old, really, pacing the league in just about every major offensive stat. And it's not cheapies, right? Like he's scorching the ball all over the place.
Yeah, there's a scorched right there. Yeah, this is a guy who just turned 20 in the September 23rd or right around the end of September. Regardless of his age, it's just in coming back from an injury where he's now pretty much going to be the future first baseman, if you will. I mean, there's another one, just a hard contact. And I did have some notes that passed along from our friend of the show, 3-1 count, who was out there. He's been out watching. He's been giving some video to as well. So shout out to him and able to just kind of fill in the blanks for us. And some of the notes he gave me here, I just want to give where his. So see here. The power comes very easily, getting less to work with at the plate. It's a hitter's league, but pitchers don't want to have bad stats. That's a nice little simple line there. But the other two players he was talking about too, that he liked a lot, Ethan Salas of San Diego and Yonelis Devries. So Xander Hope as well was a very legitimate prospect. And we also got somebody, one of our fans out there as well. Tim,
that's right.
Tim is out there, and he was been very complimentary as for Briseño as well.
Yeah, I mean it's I don't know, it's fun to watch because he's a guy. I mean, like, listen, this is not a huge surprise to either of us, honestly, that he and Lorenzo. I mean, we were pretty high on Briseño at the end of last year and heading into this season, and you know, he was off to a really good start. I think you can go back and watch a show we did probably in April where, like, he had probably had like 8 or 9 walks to 2 strikeouts. And I think I even said, like, he's too advanced for the Florida State League. And then he didn't go and, you know, he didn't tear the league apart. And then he got hurt and came back and it was a little bit slow. But he's got the offensive profile where this doesn't necessarily shock me. I think the power output is a little surprising just because, you know, he hasn't actually done that in pro ball yet. He's got tons of power and he's a guy who hits the ball hard. He stays in the strike zone. It's a really nice hit and power combination. And so I'm not terribly surprised at all that he's tearing up the league, and it's, I don't know, it's fun. We'll see what happens. I see a lot of people asking, like, is he a top 100 prospect now? Why is the power so different in Arizona than it is in Florida? And it's, you know, I think with him almost certainly not playing catcher anymore, that puts even more pressure on the bat, and it's always tough to, you know, look at a first base only prospect and say he's a legitimate prospect, but you can compare him. There's another first base prospect in the league, Xavier Isaac, who is a top 50 prospect across all of baseball, I believe. And he is hitting .265 with 3 homers, 5 doubles and 24 strikeouts in about the same amount of plate appearances. You know, Briseño's hitting .440 with 7 home runs and 14 strikeouts to 6 walks. So you can make an argument that he's a top 100 prospect now. I don't know if we'll see him on any lists, but it wouldn't shock me if he sneaks into the back of some of them.
And as you recall last year too, in the postseason last year against Clearwater, he had some missiles. I mean, he only had 2 hits in the series, but still they were both very, he had hard hit balls period. And in that series, and he also made a limited appearance in the postseason run where I think Lakeland got screwed over by the weather. And in all reality too, he was a catalyst along with Max Clark and Kevin McGonigal as part of that offense early on for Lakeland. Because if you recall, it was the offense earlier in the year that was carrying Lakeland before the pitching started catching up a little bit. When Rainer Castillo and then Gabriel Reyes came along and started pitching better, but it was Briseño's bat really that kind of really, is it fair to say he provided protection for him?
Well, I mean, you know, I think at the beginning of the year, McGonigal was hurt. He didn't play for the first month or so of the year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
3 or 4 weeks. Right, yeah. And Clark didn't really turn it on until a couple months into the season. So it was Briseño was kind of leading that offense in the first few weeks. And we have a video of his plate appearances, a full week of his plate appearances from early on. And you can see him. He's just taking walks and hitting the ball hard. So, yeah, like losing him was a tough break for Lakeland. And it's tough break. I think he probably, like you've said before, he probably would have been up to West Michigan by the second half of the year, probably helping them to make a playoff run instead of helping Lakeland. But, you know, he's certainly making up for lost time. And this is, I don't know, it's just really impressive. This is, again, these aren't like the top tier pitching prospects, although he did hit a home run off Andrew Painter, who is arguably one of the best pitching prospects in all of baseball. But you're seeing a lot of guys who are going to be big leaguers, a lot of big league relievers, and he's had no issue right now. So, yeah, I think Tigers fans are right to be excited about him, but you know, there's still some more development that needs to be done down the road.
Yeah. I was talking to Dan Dickerson and saw him yesterday, dropping off some books, and I said something over saying, he goes, yeah, he's like, yeah, it looks like a man among boys. When I saw him at spring training, and that is the case. And so it is one of those things where I view this as like, I view this objectively because he is a left-handed bat. And you get pause a little bit because the Tigers have a plethora of left-handed bats right now that they have to kind of sort through, but not necessarily a bad thing either, because the more bats, the better.
Yeah, there's nothing. Those are good problems to have. You'll some guys will come up and figure it out. Some guys won't. And then you got backup options or you've got trade chips. So, and that's one of the fun things. Like, we can move on to Tyrone Lorenzo, who is a similar player and doing similar damage down there. You know, he doesn't have the home runs numbers, but he's got 6 doubles, I think. And he's not playing as often, but he's also playing catcher and he's shown some glimpses back there. And, you know, I would argue that his performance has been just as impressive, even if the numbers aren't quite there. You know, he's smoking the ball. He's got multiple, I think, exit velocities above 110. And he showed off some solid defense. Like, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done there, too. But I think he's convincing some people that he could probably, you know, stick behind the plate at least part-time going forward. And that's huge to have a guy with this kind of power and plate discipline. And a chance to stick a catcher. I don't think he's going to hit for average the way that Briseño probably will, but he probably will hit more home runs. So I don't know. It's a nice package there to have.
Yeah, especially because you look at the way he's been hitting the ball in the gaps too. He's been doing a really good job of getting the bat head out there and just smacking it kind of where he wants to a little bit. But I think you see him here behind the plate just. The arm's fine.
Yeah, the arm's fine. he's got a above average arm strength. He's probably, you know, gonna pop 1.9 to, you know, at his best to, you know, 2 seconds above average. We talked about before. He's a bigger guy. He just needs with the big thing with him, and we've seen this a number of times with catchers going from high A to double A, and I assume that he will begin the year in Erie. That's a big step for catchers. We don't talk about, it's a big step for everybody, but we don't like really talk about it. We saw, you know, Josh Crouch was a solid defender, right? In high A, he even won, I think, the best defensive award given to the lead. And since he's got to double A, it like all fell apart and the pitchers didn't like throwing to him and all this stuff. It's just harder up there. And so that's going to be a big step for him. And really it's, I think with Lorenzo, it's just going to be more about consistency. He's shown us everything that he can do on defense. He just has to do it more often. You got to do it every time. You got to stop 99% of those balls in the dirt instead of 90%. You got to catch every ball, all these little things that he can work on. And, but again, another pretty young guy. And I think the offense will be there. So it's exciting prospect to him next year too.
Yeah. Dingler, as you recall too, it took a while for Dingler to adjust to double A. So it's not like a foregone conclusion. No, you're right. That's a good point because it was a thing where, too, as we call with Crouch, too, that there was a difference night and day between the pitching staffs once Crouch got sent back down to West Michigan. So if you can make that adjustment at double A, that's a positive sign because one of the things that I'm trying to think of, like, just I can't think of a Tiger catcher really that stands out in the last 10 years or so that has kind of gone to double A. They have no problem. I mean, maybe Alex Avila comes to mind a little bit. If you want to go back a little further than that, but even then, you know, you're right. It's not a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, Avila jumped, I think, straight from low A to double A. It's I don't know if the org just asks more from the catchers once they get to double A, because it did feel like Dingler, you know, Dingler's hitting was fine, was great in high A, and then he got to double A and the bat just kind of went away. His defense was still good, but it's almost like he just suddenly had to focus more on defense. And we've seen, like we said, with Crouch, Alfonso is kind of another situation there where, you know, he had a solid year, but, you know, we'd heard, I think, that he was one of the best framers in the system, but they seemed to kind of, I don't know if they soured on him down the stretch, but they basically gave all his playing time to Liam Hicks or they moved Alfonso to DH. So I don't know. I think they have some pretty high standards for defense from their catchers, and Lorenzo's going to need to put a lot of work in, but the signs are there that he can do it, and that's encouraging to me.
Yeah, especially his ability to hit the ball. I mean, that's going to put him on a roster somewhere, and whether it's going to be first base or catching, but preferably you'd like to see him long-term be a catcher, because the Tigers, you and I talked about this, and we'll get into this later on in the offseason, but I think the Tigers are going to probably pursue another catcher in the offseason, whether it's through the minor league side or major league side, too, to kind of shore up things a little bit. Not to say that the combination of Rodgers and Dingler isn't a bad thing, but I think they're going to have to really, you're going to have to get a veteran or something along those lines to kind of make sure that if Dingler struggles, that you're not having two catchers that are a liability with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. They need some insurance there for sure. And that's, I don't know, that's, it's got to be an adjustment for someone like Dingler too, to have gone from playing five times a week to playing like twice a week. For a guy who has been up and down as a hitter for a long time in his career, to like, it's something you got to get used to. You know, it took Jake Rodgers several years before he finally broke out somewhat offensively, and he kind of regressed this year. But you hope that with Dingler, I'm not too worried about the defense. So give him some time, and if you need to send him back to AAA and have a vet there, that's fine.
Yeah.
The other batter the Tigers sent to the Arizona Fall League is Peyton Graham, who unfortunately has kind of continued to look like Peyton Graham. He's only played six games. He's 3-for-21. He did have a double and a triple in one game, but 3-for-21 with one walk and 10 strikeouts. He's playing, I think, exclusively left field rather than shortstop. So I don't know. It looks like it's getting late real early for Peyton Graham. Like if you're not going to play shortstop and you can't hit, I don't know. I mean, there's not much use for you. It's unfortunate. You know, he missed a ton of time with injuries, and they wanted to get him back out there. I don't know the last time he's played, actually. So I don't know. That was it was worth a shot to get him some more playing time against more advanced pitching. But unfortunately, the more advanced pitching is kind of proving to be far too advanced for him.
Yeah, especially when you see, I mean, for example, the top prospect for top draft pick for Kansas City, Jack
Caglione
is in there, and he's hitting better than Graham is. And so you've seen guys who are younger, Salas's. I know they play a little different positions, but is it fair? No, but at the same time, you expect at this point to some sort of sign from Graham. And that's it is unfortunate, because the infield right now across the system is getting fuller. And so if you can't make your way to use the outfield, then hot and ready list you go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. You know, baseball doesn't work out for everybody. And that's why you have 20 rounds in the draft or whatever. It's a shame, but who knows? Maybe he can figure something out, but it certainly hasn't been a good fall league for him. And, I don't really know what to expect there. And then the Tigers, they sent four pitchers out there. The results haven't been great, but again, this is a very hitter friendly league. We've talked a lot about Rainer Castillo. I guess we start with him. He actually leads Scottsdale, or is tied for the lead with innings pitched at 10.1 through four outings. He's got two starts. So he's kind of started two games and then come back as the piggyback starter in two of them. It's interesting, because this is a pretty significant jump in competition for him, right? Like he started the year in the complex league, I think, because he was rehabbing from his wisdom teeth.
Correct. Yep.
I think part of this assignment was kind of a to prove to him, like, hey, you need more than what you have right now, right? Like the fastball, the sink, it's got good sink to it. The slider shows promise. He was flashing some decent changeups, I think, in his last outing. We were talking about that. But you just need more consistency with the secondary offerings, because he's getting beat up pretty good. I'm looking around here. 14 hits, 11 earned runs in those 10 innings. So it's a 9.58 ERA. The main thing that's kind of shocking to me, he's hit three batters. He's walked nine guys to eight strikeouts. That was not him in the Florida State League. He threw a lot of strikes. I think that was one of the things that intrigued us about him, is for a kid that young, that big, throwing that hard, it looked pretty easy, and it was in the zone a lot. And I think it's just kind of natural when you're used to throwing the ball by guys, you're getting weak groundouts, and then suddenly you're giving up tons and tons of hard contact, you start to nibble a little bit more, right? Like you're trying to be a little too fine and locate to the edges, and then you're walking guys, hitting guys, and it kind of snowballs. But again, one of the younger players in the league, I think it was a good challenge for him, a good test, and I'm not too worried about it. I think he's going to learn from it and be better for it.
I'm not worried about it either, because you're right. He is doing a lot of nibbling a little bit, where he's trying to be too fine, but he is throwing the changeup more, which is a pitch he needs to work on in the first place. I mean, if you look at the fact that he has been working slider, fastball, And that sinker, the power sinker, which was a pitch that always got him out of trouble. Every time he looked at that pitch to get him out of trouble, it worked. And in the Arizona Fall League, it's not the case at all because you're as you mentioned, the advanced competition. So you're going to have balls just kind of tattooed a little bit. And it's been the case, too, unfortunately, for Jake Miller, who has been just getting rocked.
Yeah, the numbers are really ugly. And Jake Miller had an outstanding year. He came in at number two on our reliever of the year prospect award. And that was just because I gave him a first place vote because it was a really strange season. He basically operated like a bulk reliever all year long. He made three starts, I think, early in the year and went like two innings. And then after that, it was three plus innings in every outing, but he never started until the very end of the year when he made a five inning outing for Erie. And it's always been kind of a relieverish look to me just by the way, it's just his operation, but he throws a lot of strikes, which is unfortunately probably bad for him in the AFL. And honestly, this stuff, you know, the stuff is interesting. It's at like a 92 to 95 mile an hour fastball with a lot of carry, good IVB, you know, but that's not doing much against more advanced hitting, right? These guys, that's just not going to cut it against these guys. They know what to do with that. And then the slider is solid. He'll show you a couple good ones. And he's got a changeup, but it's just, I think with him, he's probably just going to need an uptick in the velocity and in a more sharpness to the stuff. Cause yeah, what is it? 19 hits in seven innings, 19 hits and 15 earned runs in seven innings, three homers, two walks and six strikeouts. So like the strikeouts per innings is okay. Everything else is a disaster. And it's unfortunate because I do still like him. And I think the Tigers do too, right? Like he's 23. He's not super old. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Gabriel Reyes as a lefty with an interesting fastball, a pretty nice slider, some other pitches, but probably a bullpen arm down the line. So he's another guy that I think is really just getting it's kind of a baptism by fire. Like this is what's going to happen when you run into good hitters. So you're going to have to refine all this stuff. So it's unfortunate, but again, very hitter friendly league. And then, yes. They have two other arms out there. Eric Silva has pitched in four games, seven innings, 10 hits, six earned runs, three walks, seven strikeouts. He's another guy, you know, he came from San Francisco in the Mark Canna deal. Looks kind of like a potential middle inning reliever if he can get everything right. But, you know, it's a slider. It's a decent fastball. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's nothing super sexy about the profile there. It wouldn't shock me if he eventually makes his way to the big leagues, but I'm not expecting like a super long career or anything like that.
Yeah. He's still, I mean, he's only 22. So remember he was drafted. Yeah. So he's relatively young. And so there's time for him to develop still, but yeah, it was the biggest takeaway for me is just seeing Castillo trying to adjust at 20 years old, being the youngest pitcher there. And so, I thought that was Flores supposed to pitch.
Not that I know of. The one other guy out there was CJ Wines, who they got from the Red Sox and the Trey Wingenter deal, you know, kind of a small deal. And he's another guy with an interesting fastball shape that actually pitched really well after he came over. I think he also made it up to Double A from
it made it three levels. I want to say he moved up three levels pretty quick too.
Yeah. I think he was in Lakeland. I think then he was in West Michigan briefly and got up to Double A. So it's another, like I said, he's not going to blow you away with stuff. I think he tops out around 94, but it's interesting shape. And I don't know, just another guy I think they probably wanted to get more looks at after they acquired him. So yeah, he and Silver kind of look like middle relievers. I think there's something there with Jake Miller as a reliever down the road. Not really sure how it's going to shake out. And yeah, I'm not too concerned about Castillo. I think he's going to continue developing. I it wouldn't shock me, just given his size and how, like we said, how easy it looks like he's throwing. Like, it wouldn't shock me if he's sitting like 98 in another couple of years, particularly if you know, if he were to move to the bullpen, you could be looking at like another like Bruce Dar Gratterall type with just like this, you know, upper 90s triple digit bowling ball sinker and a solid slider. So I don't know, still excited about him despite the rough numbers out there.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's a learning experience for him, and I'm sure that will help him. If he starts the season, which will probably start the season at West Michigan, to kind of probably be the ace on that staff for 2025, because West Michigan right now, if you look at it on paper, is actually going to have a really good starting staff. If we'll have to dive into that a little later, but that is a that's going to be a really good staff to fun. It's going to be a fun staff to watch this year or for this coming up year. So, do you want to get into the questions, Chris?
Yeah, we got a bunch. We can thank everybody for sending all these questions. They're kind of all over the map. We got a lot of them about Briseño and Lorenzo, but also, you know, some interesting ones. And Giancarlo Stanton hit another home run tonight. Michael Siffer asked us, what package of prospects would it take to get Stanton from the Yankees? If they want Soto, the Yankees will need to readjust payroll. Seems like a quick path to give Dominguez a roster spot to fill the Stanton role. I'll be honest, I had not even considered the Tigers trading for Giancarlo Stanton for a number of reasons. He has been absolutely awesome this postseason. I don't debate it. He's one of the truly the greatest power hitters of all time, even if he hasn't, you know, the numbers aren't necessarily there. But he is not the sort of guy that Scott Harris acquires. I think he's about to turn 35. He's due almost $100 million over the next four seasons. It's like three seasons plus an opt out. So you got him till he's like 40. He's only averaged like 105 games in each of the last three seasons. And I looked it up. His WRC plus over the last 3 years is 106. It's the same as Carlos Santana, who it will come much, much cheaper and will actually play a defensive position for you that you need. So I don't see any scenario where they would actually trade for him. And if they did, it would be one of those things where I think the Yankees would have to chip in more prospects.
Yeah.
Or it would be a situation where you're trading a couple bad contracts, you're swapping them and swapping, you know, low level prospects that you like for other prospects just to make it fun. I can't even think of like a prospect package the Tigers would put together for Giancarlo Stanton. I don't know. Maybe you trade Baez for Stanton and add some, I don't know. I couldn't come up with anything that made sense.
No, also, I mean, you're talking Clark, McGonagall. I can't even think of a fantasy, like one of those trade scenario, like machine things that would for that. And I'm sorry. Like I'd rather Stanton is a great hitter. Watching him hit a home run, like it's a no doubter every time. It's great and all, but the moment that he starts missing games, Tiger fans are, it's just going to be an instant. Oh, he's injured. And it's just going to be, it's not worth the risk. And the Tigers want guys that can make them marginally better a little bit, little like by the margins. I'm not saying a big increase is not possible per se, but if you look at the way that Scott Harris has been building, it's small margins per year.
Yeah. Stanton is just not the sort of move he makes. That's a move that like the Dodgers make to get a big right-handed power bat. Right. It's not a real fit, I don't think, but, I don't know. It's an interesting idea. So, Michael, thank you for the question. Also, Stanton has a full no trade clause. So, even if they did come out and work out a deal, I'm guessing he'd be like, "Nah, I'm good." Then we have we got one. It's an interesting one too. Spartan 1963 said, "Better MLB prospect, Haoyu Lee or Kevin McGonagall?"
Ooh, that's a tough call right now. I mean, it's. You want to say McGonagall because he's a better hitter, he has better plate discipline than Lee. Obviously, he's a better athlete. I think it's kind of a wash a little bit because they're both. McGonagall has a better eye at the plate, but Lee can drive the ball with more power. McGonagall gets a hold of one. He can get a hold of one. Man, that's a tough call.
Yeah, you know, I really like this question too. I agreed with you. Like, for me, it's McGonagall right now. I was trying to play it out. Like, I was in my head. I was like, okay, what's like the percentile outcome for each one of these players? Like, 99th percentile McGonagall, who is he? And 99th percentile Lee, who is he? And then 1st percentile or whatever, 1st percentile. I think there's a world where Lee ends up as a better player than McGonagall, better big leaguer than McGonagall, and that world is like McGonagall. It just turns out that he doesn't have enough strength to impact the ball against the best pitchers in the world. And he becomes like a Nick Madrigal, right? Where it's just like, You know, he's a good hitter, but it doesn't matter because they're just going to pound him and he can't do anything about it. I don't think that's going to be the case. And then in my head, I was like, all right, well, what are these, like, just an average outcome for both of these guys? And I think they end up something like a Jonathan India and like a Gavin Lux, like this sort of average big leaguers. And I think there's a chance they're both the same. But like you said, I think McGonagall, the better plate discipline, the better bat-to-ball skills, and it's unlikely, but there's a non-zero chance that he can play shortstop. He could fill in at shortstop sometimes. He could be like a Nico Horner type, who's an awesome second baseman and then play shortstop at times. And so I think just the ceiling for McGonagall is a little bit higher. But, you know, it wouldn't shock me if Lee develops into like Isak Paredes and he's, you know, hitting 25, 30 bombs because he's just pulling the ball all the time. And that's a good outcome too. So I don't know. It's probably closer than a lot of people would think, but I still give the edge to McGonagall.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to give this slight advantage also because of speed a little bit too. Mm-hmm. He's slightly faster on the bases in terms of like also baseball instincts. Not to say Lee doesn't have those, because he clearly does. Because he's able to make the adjustments on both second and third base. But I think McGonagall's got the it factor. Not to, again, I'm saying Lee doesn't do that. Lee is really good at what he does as far as like driving the ball and you were saying earlier, pull the ball, and also has a pretty good arm. Has a really good arm at third base. It's just, is it accurate? No, it still needs some accuracy issues. But still, if the Tigers have to make it a tough decision coming up here in the winter, because they do have a plethora of infielders that they have to kind of figure out what they're going to do, and depending on what they're going to do in free agency, which you know they're going to be active, whether it's going to be through third base or first base or trade or what have you. There is they have some talent they can actually make a decision with. And so that's a good problem to have with Lee and McGonagall.
Yeah. I'm paying attention to this Dodgers game right now. I see Freddie Freeman up with the bases loaded and in play runs. And I'm curious what happened. Nobody cares listening to this. They already know what happens, but it's a single, a 2-run single for Freddie Freeman. What a postseason for him. What a World Series. But yeah, I don't know. It's fun thinking about. We talked about it before. Like, each year would be nice if Hyu Lee could play third base. I think he's exactly what they need there. Maybe not the ideal power that you want, but everything else about his game is really fun. The aggression, just the way he plays. He's going to steal, like you said, he's not as fast as McGonagall, I don't think, but he plays more aggressively. And so he'll still steal bags. He might get caught, you know, half the time. But I don't know. That's a fun one. We also have a question from Rudy T. Dog. Rudy T. Dog. Do you slot Lorenzo at Erie and Briseño at West Michigan to start the season? And then his second question is the organization moving on from Andrew Navigado?
I think they are. I think so. Because if Navigado, when they had all those injuries in the infield and they kept going back to Kreidler, they kept going back to the same, you know, or it was whether it was Ryan
Vlade.
Navigado had got his chance. We got his chance, and I just don't think he's. I don't think the org sees him that way, personally.
Yeah. I guess my answer is to yes to all of Rudy T. Dog's questions. I do think that. I think Lorenzo's going to Erie. We talked about it earlier, but you know he's already got a full season at High A, and you know he didn't hit terribly well with Great Lakes, but he was awesome with West Michigan, and the rest of his game, you know, this AFL, I think he's probably ready for the challenge of double A. And honestly, I think Briseño, if they sent him to double A, I bet he would struggle a little bit at first hitting, but he would probably pick it up eventually because of that, just that combination of plate discipline and the ability to hit the ball hard. But this is an organization, we have not seen them do anything like that yet. We'll see them. They eventually will move guys quickly, particularly once they get up to triple A, right? They don't necessarily give, you know, we saw with Young, we saw with Job, we saw with other guys. If there's prospects that they like and they get them to AAA just for a taste, they don't mind moving them up to the big leagues after that. But I can't think of anybody who's an actual prospect who they've actually like skipped a level, right?
No.
So I think Briseño starts in West Michigan. And I think it's a good challenge for him because not just like just the level of competition, but to be playing in the cold weather for the first time, probably, and to be playing in those big spacious ballparks, it's going to be, it's a good challenge for guys sometimes to get up there and get that different environment. And, you know, you're playing, you'd also be playing in front of 3,000, 5,000, 6,000 fans on a regular basis, which is something that you don't do in the Florida State League. So I think that'll be a good experience for him. And it wouldn't shock me if he gets up there and you know, it's a slow start, but then probably tears it up. And by June or July, he's in Double A with Lorenzo.
Not to mention, too, I mean, that ballpark at West Michigan is one of the most cavernous ones in the Midwest League. And so you were talking about the cold weather, but also that ballpark plays a big factor. And they're changing things right now. They've been working on it, the construction in the offseason. So there's more changes to come at LMCU Park. And the fact that he's going to take on the cream of the crop in high A pitching right there, too, that'll be a definite adjustment for him. But if he matches the ball like he did in the Arizona Fall League, then yeah, you're right, Chris. It's just a matter of time before he goes into Double A. I mean, it's just if you can hit power in that league in the Midwest League, which is such a hard thing to do, then there's something special along those lines.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't know. I mean, like he certainly has the raw power to do it and the contact to do it. It's just, you know, like you said, it's a tough place to hit. And on Navigado, we talked about like you said, I don't think they view Navigado as a particularly priority prospect to them, but I do think that they have control of him, as it were. I don't think he's a minor league free agent until after this season. I thought it was by this season, I mean 2025. I thought he was a minor league free agent now, but I think he's got one more year. So I'm sure they love having him in the organization. We've heard nothing but good things about the guy as a teammate and a leader and all that stuff. So, you know, who knows? Maybe next year is his chance, or maybe they let him go and give him an opportunity to catch on somewhere else. But we haven't heard anything yet, so I don't know for sure.
Yeah, we'll probably see something when the World Series comes to an end.
We'll start seeing some movement in November. Like, we've seen a little bit of movement on the transaction logs, but those are mostly exclusively basically the late international free agent signings for who knows how much, 10,000, 15,000. We got a question from Bob M. Back to Lorenzo. What are the odds that Lorenzo can improve enough defensively to stay behind the plate long term? I never know how to put odds, but yeah, go ahead.
I think there's a good chance. I mean, I think that, again, just the one thing that I personally notice from my amateur point of view is that I think from side to side movement, he struggles a little bit with just kind of getting that block in the play a little bit. He's a little slow bit back there, but he's got a good arm. We saw that just now on the video. He has the ability to just, as far as framer goes and everything, it's kind of like a mixed bag a little bit there, because I think he did cost him a couple games at West Michigan with that. But overall, he's a work in progress, and at least he's putting the work in. So I think there's a good chance for him to stick behind the plate. If in terms of like odds, I go 60%, I don't know, percentage, I don't know, 60%.
Yeah, that works for me. Yeah, I think you nailed it. Like, he's never going to be, I don't think he's ever going to be a Gold Glover. Like, I never say never. Sometimes guys end up with completely different profiles than you think. Like, I thought Austin Wells was going to be just a bat first, catching first base type. And I think he's grading out as a really good defender now. I have to check that out, but you never know. Like, guys can make pretty big strides if they're willing to work at it, and they might have skills that they didn't even know about. So yeah, Wells ended up as one of the better catching defenders according to Fangraphs this year, which is a stunner to me. But yeah, like you said, he's got the arm strength. The lateral agility is not really there. You know, he needs more work framing, blocking the balls, all those things. But those are all things that you can learn, I think, or you can improve on at least slightly. I don't really know a ton about the way he calls games yet, but he seems okay in that regard. Like, I don't know. He's working with a lot of different pitchers, a lot of different arms in the AFL. So I think that's a good thing for him, right? You're seeing a lot of different arm slots, a lot of different shapes, as the Tigers like to say. So he's getting exposed to some pretty good arms. And I think he can do it. Will he ever be your primary catcher? I don't know. But I think he'd be pretty valuable as a guy if he's going to hit and take walks and he can play you 50, 60 games behind the plate, that's crazy valuable. And if he's a first baseman DH the rest of the time, that's fine. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you. I think I go 50-50 that, like, you know, he stays as a catcher. But I don't know, maybe I'm leaning more towards 60-40 that he stays at least part time. But, and all right, we go on to, oh, here's a fun one. Nick Spillane.
Yes.
We're talking third base options now. He said, what external third base option intrigues you the most, not named Alex Bregman? And then he mentions Nolan Arenado, Eugenio Suarez, Cabrian Hayes, Yoan Moncada, Ryan McMahon, Gleyber Torres, position change. So there's, you know, a bunch of different names out there. Is there anybody you like out of that group if you're not going to get Bregman?
What was the name, the last two names he said?
So he's got Gleyber Torres there with a position change. He's got Ryan McMahon, Moncada, Cabrian Hayes, Eugenio Suarez, and Nolan Arenado.
I like so he asked me about making a trade for Nolan, because the Cardinals do need pitching and they're going through a regime change right now with Chaim Bloom taking over as, I think, the farm director, or are you going to be the GM?
I think he's the farm director now, but he's going to be the GM after next year. I think it's kind of a slow coup.
Yeah, similar to Dombrowski when he took over for Randy Smith. You know, I like Brandon. I think Ryan McMahon is a perfect Tiger in a sense that, like, he's a guy who just going to be under the age of 30, who has some pop in his bat. And the fact of the matter is the only thing that sucks is that he bats left-handed.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. You don't want another left-handed bat. So, you know, for Nolan, Arenado, the Tigers could give him the Tigers gave a nice package for that, for something along those lines. But I that would be my dream scenario right there, to have him, because I think he has 2 years left on his deal too as well.
I'm looking through 27, so 3 years.
3 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
So that's
about $30 million a year.
$30 million a year, and the Tigers have they're part of the third highest Scrooge team. That was interesting. The Score came out with this article that shows revenue per profit, or I'm sorry, what was it, the payroll of the team based off the profit the team has made. So in other words, how much of the profit are they spending on team salary? And it was Oakland and Tampa were number one and two. The Tigers were number three. In terms of Scrooge. They call it the Scrooge. Was it called the Scrooge?
Yeah, the Scrooge Index, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, Scrooge Index. So they do have some money to spend with that. I would like to know that would be my take on that. Because I think the Tigers have enough depth in their system to make that trade. And Harris has indicated that they will use their farm system for trades for the first time. And this is a team that doesn't do that very often. I mean, we just saw that last year, for the first time during the Avila administration, it barely existed at all. So, and we have to go back to the Dombrowski era for that to happen. So, I think if they're going to make a trade, I think they're going to trade. And this would make, to me, this would make the most sense.
I have issues with most of these guys, and I'm going to tell you about them. Now, the thing that scares me about Arenado, he's still an awesome defender. But his underlying data is going downhill very quickly. It's like gross. If you go to Baseball Savant, his average exit velocity, like his batted ball data this year, worse than Giovanni Urshela. And that's over the course of a full season. Average exit velocity is the same as like Stephen Kwan, 86 miles an hour. Max exit velo, 107. I'm worried. I'm worried that he's not going to hit anymore. Now, the defense is great. You can get a glove first, you know, potential Hall of Famer at third base. That's fun. But, I worry if he's not going to hit. Like, that's kind of what they need, you know.
Do you think it's like a change of scenery thing, though? I mean, is it maybe?
You know, I don't know. I just think, let's see, how old is he now? There he is. So he is 33. You wouldn't think that he would be.
He's 33. Going down, wow. I thought he was
going downhill. This,
31.
But I'm looking like you look at his Savant page and like the percentiles are just they're ugly. Now, you know, I don't want to get too dependent on that, but I don't know. That would concern me for a guy who you're going to be paying $30 million. I would like it if he was going to hit a little bit more. And I have kind of similar concerns about Ke'Bryan Hayes, who's an excellent defender, but has never really done much on offense. He seems like the sort of guy that gets you fired because he's got, he's a guy who has had good underlying data in the past, but he's like the opposite of Arenado where he doesn't like it's on the ground. It's not to the pull field. So he's like a guy who needs a swing change. And I don't think the Tigers are the team to do that. Maybe they are now. I just haven't seen it. You know, like you've seen some nice subtle changes in Matt Vierling. But I don't know. You know, you could also say that Matt Vierling might be kind of Ke'Bryan Hayes-ish. He's certainly not the defender that Hayes is, but I don't know what you'd give up for that. We talked about that a little bit when we were trying to figure out Pittsburgh trade deals.
Because Pittsburgh's so good on pitching too.
Yeah. And Moncada doesn't do anything for me. He had one good year and it was the 2019 season, so that doesn't count. I don't know about Torres. I keep hearing or reading that he doesn't want to change positions, and I don't know if he can or not. It would be an interesting one if he's willing to do it. But I remain kind of intrigued by Eugenio Suarez. He's let's see. So Arenado is 33 years and 6 months. How old is Suarez? Suarez is 33 years and 3 months. So he's a little bit younger than Arenado. He's a free agent, so you don't have to trade for him. And I was looking over the last 3 years, Chapman or Suarez, his offense has been slightly better than Matt Chapman's. And his defense is just about the same. You can, by any measure, 17 outs above average for Chapman, 14 for Suarez. So you're getting a hitter. You're basically getting like, you know, 90%, 100% Matt Chapman. And you're probably, I bet you can get him for half of what he signed for. He signed for six years and 151. I bet you can get Suarez for 3 and 75, 3 and 70. Now, maybe they don't want to do that, but he's a right-handed hitter with power. He's playing solid to above-average defense. He's the guy I'd go after if you're not going to get Bregman. But that's just me. He's there's going to be some strikeouts there. He's not going to run, but I don't know, the pop and the defense. I'd consider it.
Yeah, the barrel rate. You're talking about the barrel rate. Something I was looking at. I was looking at Arenado's barrel rate, and the drop from 7.3 to 3.8 in 2024 is kind of you're right. It is kind of alarming when you consider that. As far as like, okay, I think the Tigers would willingly go up, be happy with the glove and a 272 batting average from third base, because they didn't have any production in third base at all. I mean, literally nothing. And so, but the hard hit rate is where it kind of stands out a little bit too with him as well. It dropped down to 31.6. So it's kind of alarming a little bit that it dropped from the year before at 38.1. So I can see what you're talking about, having reservations about him like that. If you look at the numbers a little deeply. But at the same time, if you look at the, like where he's all his spray chart is in left field, Chris. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as like where he was able to hit the all his like home run power and like what have you, all I mean he's in Comerica he would be
he's basically a dead pole hitter now. Yeah. And yeah, like I don't know, you would need to do some diving there in ways that we can't, right? Like that. He may have been dealing with some kind of injury all year long or some soreness that made it so he couldn't really, you know, give his best swing, but he's a gamer and wanted to play. Like, that wouldn't shock me, but I would definitely want that information before I made a trade for him because, yeah, it's kind of an alarming power drop. But he's a name that's come up, and we saw, I think the Cardinals said that they're looking to move him, right? So it's an option. It's just not necessarily the one I would be going for. And along those lines, Fire 329 just asked us, Alex Bregman signing or Nolan Arenado trade? And for me, I'm taking Bregman. He doesn't have, you know, the world's best power either, but he's a more complete player. He's a couple years younger, and you know, everything you hear about him is he's the sort of guy you want in your clubhouse. Just a leader, a winner, all that nonsense. It kind of reminds me of like Ian Kinsler, I guess, is a guy that, you know, he's just a winning player and you get him on your team. The issue there is he's probably going to cost you a whole lot of money in a lot of years.
If I had it, I'd love to get Bregman. Bregman would be the case, but if we're looking at a trade possibility, Arenado is not a bad idea. It really isn't. Yeah. And Hayes, like to mention, we were talking about Hayes a little bit. There's just not enough of a sample size for me to be confident that he would be another a solution at third base. Especially if you give up a prospect that has some sort of potential. And Pittsburgh's been able to kind of change around some of their pitching prospects a little bit better. So I don't know. We'll see. I think the Tigers, however they're going to address first base and third base, I think it's going to be via trade. That's what I think it is going to happen. I could be wrong about that, but I think if they have that trade capital, they might as well they're going to use it. I really think if there's one thing about Scott Harris that I actually thoroughly enjoyed, he is kind of, he says what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is whether or not. You believe, I mean, again, the whole trade deadline with the Dodgers and all that stuff, but he's ended up looking pretty good so far on that trade right now. By the way, it is strange. I know that you probably already know the outcome of the game, but it is strange that within the last 10 minutes or so of this of us recording is a tie game in New York.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, things fell apart. I mean, I think the Dodgers made two errors. Yeah. Single error to start that inning. That's a tough way to go. But yeah, I don't know. What would we? I'm not going to complain if the Tigers land either Arenado or Bregman. Honestly, I just put the warning flags up for Arenado at this point. But next question we have is from Brian Cowell. He said, "Hey, Roger and Chris, just wondering who you guys think would be behind Brant Herder and Ty Madden in starting depth, and is it a lock for Flores to move to the bullpen, or should he stay stretched out in Toledo?"
I think they might stretch him out in Toledo now. I think the idea was to put him in the bullpen, but I think with all the injuries, you look at, I mean, keep in mind, Sawyer Gibson Long's coming back too. So I think Sawyer Gibson Long could be the next guy back in starting depth, depending on how he throws. Although you could put Gibson Long in a long relief situation, and it kind of similar to how the Tigers use their opener a little bit. But as far as who would be kind of next guy up, as far as like for the Tigers go after those two in terms of starting depth right now in the minors, Brian, that's a tough call because, well, I mean, you have Montero, like, so it depends. Like, so if they bring back Casey Mize or not, if Mize is going to be back in the rotation or not, if Mize isn't coming back, then you would probably want to put Montero in the mix there. I like personally, again, depending on how they want to use, but maybe Garrett Burhan, who might get a chance, an opportunity. He might be eighth or ninth down the rotation. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be the next guy up or anything. But you also, I don't think Manning's long for this organization either. Am I happy, Chris? I think it's going to be, I think, you know what? I'll make an educated prediction. I think they bring in another starter from another organization via trade, and that becomes the next.
Well, step. I mean, we did hear that originally, like the trade they had with the Yankees that didn't go, the Flaherty trade.
Yeah,
I think the centerpiece of that deal was a starting pitcher, Will Warren, right? Like, so they may have been looking for other starting pitching depth. I agree. I imagine they're going to sign or acquire another starting pitcher or two. And then, so you start from the top down. You got Scoble, of course. You figure Olsen is in there in some capacity. And then it's kind of a bunch of question marks. You Montero's got a chance. Job has a chance to be in the rotation. Mize, Manning, Herder, all those guys. There's a chance, right? I don't think they're going to give those guys away or let them go when they could. We talked about it earlier this year. Like, I think Scott Harris is completely fine having a bunch of extra big leaguers in Toledo. He doesn't care. Yeah. Doesn't hurt him at all. It's not great for the players, but he's fine with it. So I think
paid off too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're going to keep those guys around. I mean, like, Brian Sammons is on the 40-man roster. I think he's probably going to get removed, but it wouldn't shock me if they keep him around just for depth. You mentioned Gibson Long. I agree. Burhan, I think, is a guy that they may add to the 40-man roster. He still strikes me as a future reliever more than a starter, but he's worked a starter's load. And then Troy Melton is – he didn't have a great year at AA, but he's got a good arm, and, you know – he's not that far away from the big leagues, I don't think, if he can stay healthy and throw. So that's the depth there. But I do think I agree with you that they'll go out and they'll sign a couple big leaguers and probably some minor league depth too. Just, you know, we always say it. Everybody always says it. You can't have enough pitching.
Yeah, you can't have enough pitching. And I think there's definitely a body of evidence there to support that too. With, you mentioned the Will Warren thing, but also – Harris has indicated that they're going to get some more. They're going to get some arms, whether it's arms that they're going to the Walker Bueller thing that we started months ago, and all of a sudden people were just saying, oh, it's like the greatest idea since sliced bread, or whatever. However, whatever idea they do, or if they get something for, if they make, let's say, if they decide to move on from Spencer Torkelson.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't know if either of us mentioned Lyle Lockhart is still there in the system. Like, you know, yeah, there's another guy that, that's got some, he could. And as for Flores, I don't know. It's been weird because he has always felt like a reliever. Even when he was starting, and, you know, everybody thought he was going to be a reliever, and then he was like, hey, well, he's throwing a lot of strikes and he looks like a starter.
I personally thought he was going to be a starter. Yeah.
Yeah. And so did I. And then, like, every time they try him as a reliever, things go terribly wrong. He got hurt a couple times this year. He couldn't get anybody out. He looked great in spring training. And we talked about, like, you know, if that's the guy he is going forward, the guy that we saw in spring training, then he had like closer potential, but then it just completely fell apart. So I don't know what they're going to do with him. I don't know what he wants to do. I don't know, you know, a couple injuries, who knows what's going on there. I still, I guess, kind of lean toward him in the bullpen because of the way he looked, but it, like Raj said, it wouldn't shock me if they just, all right, go stretch out and we'll use you as a depth starter if we need you.
Yeah, I mean, the Tigers have they're willing to flip the there's no if there's one thing about the Tigers in the last couple of years is they're willing to be adaptable. It's not a rigid thing anymore. They're not you're this guy, you're a starter, you're this. Mm-hmm. They have been able to surprise a lot of people with that. So I think that that's something that can be with Flores. And I know Flores's role and just, you know, talking to people that Flores is been a little bit unhappy with things, and, you know, he thinks he should have been here at this point in the major leagues at this point based off his stuff. But again, I mean, maybe he came back too soon from injury. I mean, he was what, he pitched for like 3 weeks and was back on the list or back on the IL. So, you know, and I want to get back to Troy Melton for just a quick second before we get to our last question of the evening. Troy Melton, to me, I just think that it was just an adaptation period in Erie for him. I mean, I think that there was times where he looked really good, but then I think, like, just trying to find, like, his, I think the Tigers had him working on things because a lot of times there was things that were just hanging over the plate. There was a lot of, like, he gave up a lot of home runs. Mm-hmm. And I think that what I like about Melton is there's enough stuff there that, I you're right. He's younger. And I know we talked to Jeff from Baseball America about him. The stuff is there, and there's a lot of good things you can like about him, but I think it's just a combination of really, I mean, he gave up 19 home runs and 100 innings of work this year. So I the fly ball rate too, it was a sharp increase, from West Michigan but the line drives, the harder hit contact was there. That's just, again, he could be just trying some things out, but there's enough polish there for him to, if you look at this FIP, again, batting average 271 against. No. Yeah, but, you know, this is good, but still.
No, it wasn't good, but it's strange because I think Brandon talked about a lot to us. Well, like, he was just throwing too many strikes, too many pitches down the middle.
Yeah, K rate of 27.7, which is good.
The strikeout rate was good. The walk rate was good. The home run rate was awful. And the batting average against was bad. And it's just one of those things where, like, okay, you've got some stuff there. You just need to locate better, and maybe that's just more time. Maybe that's just a different game plan. Maybe that's moving on the mound. Who knows? Yeah. We do have like a handful more questions, but we don't have to answer them all, I guess.
I didn't see the. I didn't see that last one. There we go. Yeah. Well, I did. Go ahead, continue.
Yeah, I mean, we got this. This from our buddy Charlie Pickering. This is just kind of a thought exercise. He said, pretend that all the rosters, both major league and minor league, in 2025 are exact same as they were at the end of the 2024 season. Where do you have the Tigers finishing next year in this scenario? So basically, if the Tigers next year go into next year with the exact same team, and everybody else does, the exact same team as they had like these final 6 weeks, how many games did the Tigers win? Yeah, I mean, it's
I would go 75, 76 wins.
Yeah, it was tough for me. I couldn't do this just based on vibes. Like, yeah, it felt good. Like, so I went and looked. I looked at where they ranked over the final 6 weeks, and they had a 99 WRC plus as an offense. So still basically average, slightly below average, like 14th, 15th in the big leagues. And their pitching by F4 was sixth overall. So then I looked like, okay, who had a 99 WRC plus basically for the full season and you know, finished sixth in pitching. And you end up with like 34 war, 35 war total, which you add that to whatever the replacement level is. And you're looking at somewhere between 75 and 85 wins. And to me, I would probably lean toward the lower end of that because as we talk about, like, the pitching was amazing but also just not sustainable. I don't think you could do that for an entire season and have it work. It was amazing that they did it as long as they did. Who knows? Maybe they will, but yeah, I just don't think you can. I don't think it works because as soon as you have one or two blowups, it throws the whole thing off for like a week. So, and they just somehow managed to avoid those for the most part. So
yeah,
it's schedule, a fun question.
And also the schedule too helped. I mean,
I was leaning somewhere between 75 and 80 wins. Yeah, there are more questions.
Yes, let's power through these last two here. Right. So this one's from Mitchell, a buddy, a friend of the podcast. As a prospect fanatic, I'm curious if each of these players continue to succeed, what would be the earliest estimated time arrival in major leagues for Clark, McGonagall, Lizardo, and Briseño? And his other question was, if the Tigers made a move for right-handed hitting shortstops such as Jordan Lawler or Matt McLean, what prospect package would they give up? And thank you for all the great content and work. It is truly appreciated. Thank you, Mitchell, for listening. And I will answer your other question via email. He had another question that goes beside this. The answer to the first question, I think of those four names, I think the earliest time estimated arrival, I would go with Briseño, only because you notice with Clark, there's always been a period adjustment. I mean, his period adjustment in West Michigan was short, though. But based off position availability, Briseño would make the most sense to me if he continues to move that way. And if the Tigers make a move for right-handed shortstop, which is that's a great question for like Lawler and Matt McLean. It depends. I mean, Arizona's going to probably want Lawler's still with Arizona, right? I mean,
Yeah. That's, I don't know. It's like two different packages there, I think. Yeah. For who's moving quickest? I mean, that's a tough one. Like, I'm tempted to just say the guy that has the most experience at the highest level, which would be Lorenzo, but he's going to still be working on catching. And so I think that's going to slow him down. I don't know. You know, it's fun to think about, like, what about that 1% chance, that 0.5%, that 0.1% chance that Briseño is like Yordan Alvarez, right? Like, he just goes out and just never stops hitting. He pulls a Juan Soto, and it's like, all right, well, we'll promote him again. And, oh, he just keeps hitting. And then, you know, in 3 months, he's in the big leagues. I think, you know, like I said, it's a very small chance, but it's there. I think that the guy that would make it to the big leagues out of that group is McGonagall, just because of the pure bat to ball skills.
In terms of earliest?
Yeah. Like I think he's a guy, he walked 50% more than he struck out this year.
Right.
He's a guy like, I don't think he's going to be too, he didn't have a great start at West Michigan, but that was a lot of like bad, batted ball luck. He was still walking a ton and not striking out. And so I just think his approach is advanced enough that if, you know, if the need arose and they wanted to, they could probably push him pretty quickly. And I think he'd adjust and be fine. But I don't know. It wouldn't shock me if all four of those guys end up making their big league debuts within like 4 weeks of each other, you know, probably in late 2026.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Yeah. The reason why I was about Presenio is because of position versatility or position, you know, that's what I was thinking about that because Clark, I mean, it factors into whether or not you have Parker Meadows and those little like things like that. And as far as McGonagall goes, I mean, if he's going to play short, then great. You put him and Keith together and boom, bada bing, there you go. But I mean, I still think McGonagall is it's still long-term your second base. Mm-hmm. I know it really depends on what the Tigers want to do position wise too. And this is where they have like a plethora of good problems. But yeah, the Lala question, I think we'll have to save that for another time because I would like to do a little more research on that. But yeah, that's a good question there. And the last, Stan had three quick questions. Any news leaks on whether Malloy has been practicing off season? Has been practicing the first base this off season? Malloy has not. As far as I know, I have no idea with that. With that yet. That's something we'll ask Ryan Garko, I'm sure, when we talk to Garko here, probably in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully, one, if Casey Mize fails to reestablish the slider, how soon he'll become a bullpen arm? Two, especially with considering the Tigers are looking for a right-handed bat, how much harm does Justice Bigby do his career with his lackluster hitting performance at AAA Toledo last year? Mize needs to establish that slider in order to make himself a bullpen weapon. He can't be one-trick pony with the splitter and the fastball and that knuckle curve. That knuckle curve is a pretty good pitch, but it's just going to be more effective. But I'm not really sure what his long-term here in Detroit is going to be either.
Yeah. I understand the temptation to move him to the bullpen because, you know, he was touching the upper 90s and I think we talked about it before. It's kind of like the same mix as Shelby Miller, honestly.
Yeah.
A splitter and an upper, you know, a fastball with an iffy slider. But he's been injured, but he is a guy that you feel like you can get 4 or 5 innings out of. And I feel like he's more valuable to them as bullpen depth, but who knows? Like, you know, I kind of felt the same way about not as bullpen depth. I'm sorry, as rotation depth. I remember thinking the same way about Michael Fulmer back in the day. And you never know when a guy just goes all out for an inning and, you know, starts throwing the hell out of the ball. And maybe Mize's slider takes a tick up just because he's gripping it and ripping it. I don't know. So, but yeah, it wouldn't shock me if they move him to the bullpen, but I think they're going to keep him for starting depth as long as they can, you know, before he gets prohibitively expensive. The Bigby question is a bummer. They do need a right-handed power bat. It would be fun if they had a right-handed corner outfielder power bat, but it's just not the hitter he is. It was our main concern with him is how he would fare against the most advanced pitching. And it didn't work. Last year, at least his approach, he hits the ball hard, but it's up the middle the other way. And pitchers just kind of pounded him inside and basically sawed him off. And he could never really turn on the ball. I think he hit 4 home runs all season. It's an ISO under 100. That's just not going to work as a corner bat anywhere. So who knows? I mean, he's a great kid. Works hard. Maybe he can figure something out with a swing change. But yeah, I think I came into the year thinking that he was a lock to be added to the 40-man roster, and I don't think there's a chance he will be now. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and I think one of the things about Bigby this year, you expected to turn around a little bit, was at least get maybe 15 to 20 home runs, and that wasn't even the case at all. And that's where I expect at least 15 to 20, and it was just at times it wasn't the same kind of stroke we saw in Erie where he was able to just spray the ball everywhere. sometimes the swing was a little too long at Toledo, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he ended up in the year, he didn't, I'm looking, you know, he hit a lot of doubles. He didn't strike out too much. He walked a fair amount, but it was just no impact. And with no impact as a corner bat, you just, there's not much of a career there. So it's unfortunate. Don't want to close the door on him yet, but yeah, it would have been helpful to have that guy come up and have some power. But yeah, the third part of that question.
Oh, the third part of the question was about Malloy, whether or not he has been practicing first base.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't heard anything. I haven't stalked him on Instagram to see if he's doing anything. So I don't know. Unfortunately, you'd think that would be a natural step, but you never know. So
yeah, he could be also relaxing. You know, it is so early in the offseason. It's as a recording, although it was 80 degrees today. So the summer weather did feel really weird here in Metro Detroit. But that's it for our mailbag show. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you want to donate to the website, there's the donate like there, the PayPal link. Like I said, there's going to be, and also if you want to check out the reliever year award, which goes to Yoel Sanchez, so our TigersMLReport.com. All our awards are out there as well. And again, thank you for everybody who is participating with the questions. The please like and subscribe to our channel. All that goes a long way. The questions, the feedback, that's been fantastic this offseason. And this has been a pretty good indication with the right now the World Series, depending on however the World Series goes, we'll be covering everything. Emily Walden's gonna be out there in the AFL. I'm sure she'll get some updates about that, but we'll be tracking down some players and some people in the front office. It was kind of weird when asking Scott Harris about right after the press conference about having a 2-minute conversation about Haiyu Lee, and you know, he was very adamant about him being a top 100. So that was actually a very, if there's a guy that pays attention to the system quite a bit, you expect him to, because he's the GM, or you know, he's the president of baseball operations. But the fact that he's that dialed in, all the stuff going on, it's like he is truly a baseball junkie. He's a baseball nerd. So
yeah, you always wonder if anybody, you know, if the people in the front office are paying attention to these, you know, random late night AA games, and they are.
Yeah,
it's like, yep, all right, well, so at least we've got some compatriots there. But yeah, I don't know, we're going to be moving on to the tool series soon.
Yes.
And I also was thinking about putting together just you know, if the World Series were to end soon, throwing up like just a hey, let's make some trades piece, just one of our classic throwing trades at the wall pieces. But yeah. But yeah, the tool series, we're going to discuss, you know, the best hit tool, the best power, the best speed, the best defense, you know, best pitching.
People have been asking about it, actually. So it's actually good to see that. And I'm looking forward to doing that. And I'm looking forward to also, Jerry's been doing some stuff over on our Patreon. So don't forget to check out our Patreon, Tigers Minor League Report. If you go there on Patreon, and Jerry's, I got to talk to Jerry about Jerry. I got to talk to Jerry about doing some, we have some ideas. He's doing another base, line too, but he did really good one on Cole Keith that it's on our Patreon and eventually under the paywall. So there's gonna be some stuff paywall coming up soon too as well. We're trying to change our model up a little bit so we actually can make some money because times are tough around here. And so anyway, we're not gonna go into that right now, but thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. There will probably be another podcast here probably in the next week or two when we start doing our tool series. So the video content is just about to start here. Our hiatus, if you will, it's over. We'll be talking to you soon. Have a good night or good afternoon, however you listen to it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, everybody.